Andy.
Working? Are we working?
I saw him like one brief thing.
What have you been doing? What have you been doing if you haven't been in there?
I didn't have any trials set.
No trials. Yeah, George did have all the trials.
Okay, we're going to call this meeting to order. It's 5:31. We are in the Brookings Administrative Center, Jennifer K. Putman Meeting Room. Today is Friday, November 20th, 2009. Present is myself, Aaron Ammons. To the right, we go.
Randy Rosenbaum, public defender.
John
Miller. Ken Turner.
Bill Brown.
Matt Gladney.
Bias Weibel.
Roger Holland.
And Jenny Putman.
We do know that Patricia Avery will be excused tonight, and Judge DeFantis is also excused because of the surgery. I have not heard from others. I do anticipate that Brian Dolomar will be here. He's bringing some information that we were supposed to share in the announcements and communications.
Aaron?
Yes.
I just realized that Lauren Cowart's email is not working. So
we need to remind
her about with a phone call.
Okay. Will you do that?
I will do that as the secretary. Right? And I'll just pass this card along. If you would like to add something in the note to Kim and the Get Well card to Judge DeFantis.
Yeah, I suspect that actually Lorraine could not make it tonight because her brother's sick in Chicago. She was not at the board meeting last night.
Oh,
is that
Lorraine?
Yeah, she got a brother that's got a heart problem. But,
Joan, did you get minutes? Everybody get minutes? Ken, did you get minutes? Okay.
So we are at the approval of the agenda. So if everyone's had a chance to look at the agenda, and we can approve the agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Roger, second by Mr. Weibel. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. Approval of the minutes for October 23rd, 2009. For anyone who has not read them, too bad, too late. No, I'm just kidding. Do we need to take a few minutes for people to look at
that? That might be a good idea.
Okay. Take a minute for folks to glance over.
Come on.
And you would already note that our wonderful secretary has already made the correction in the announcements and communications section. The word unanimous has been replaced with the word mandatory.
I didn't correctly perhaps state what this meeting is. Is it a continuing education?
Judges are required to attend an annual education conference. It's given twice a year, either in, I think it's January or March. There's a couple times in the spring. Mm-hmm. And one of the elements or one of the topics that's going to be discussed at that is issues involving jury and the diversification of the jury pool. And that's what Judge DeFantis was referencing last time.
So if I will have to leave it to you to say whether or not I wrote that correctly under the announcement.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
Okay. Everybody, any issues with the minutes?
Did I spell Kurt Bedrow's name correctly?
I believe it's Kirk Bedrow, K-I-R-K, but the last name is spelled correctly.
Okay, thank you.
Other than that, I move that the minutes be approved as amended.
Moved by Roger Holland, second by Matt Gladney. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. Public participation. We have two guests here. Maybe somebody wants to offer some public participation. No? Now, you can speak up if you want to. Don't let him tell you no. You're welcome to speak right now. Thank you. I want to record that, Madam Secretary. Thank you for public participation. Okay, so announcements and communications. I have one. It is in relationship to an event that is taking place coming up this Monday. Has somewhat, and right on cue, there it is. That's exactly what we needed. All right.
I'll pass a couple of these around.
You thought it was lunch? Oh, wow. Next time.
I like the courier. What this is, if you all would just take one and pass them down, I appreciate it, is that there's a national day of outrage against senseless gun violence and how it affects the community. And however it comes, in whatever fashion it comes, whether it's gang violence, you know, youth violence, the senseless death of an individual, a youth in particular, of course, it sort of sparks some of the work that's been going on in the community. But this is a national day of outrage. It's going to be going on in over 20 cities across the country. And we are participating, CU Citizens is joining in with the National Action Network, Al Sharpton's organization. They're doing this all over the country. And it's an opportunity, we thought, for people who don't necessarily have the most cordial conversations all the time or don't agree all the time. This is an issue we thought that a lot of people could stand together on, an issue of violence, senseless violence, and unnecessary deaths and how it hurts the community. So we were asking committee members to come out and asking individuals at the committee to reach out to other folks in their respective organizations or friends and ask them to come out. It's going to be this Monday at the Champaign County Courthouse Plaza. It starts at 12:30 as far as organizing, and then the actual rally begins at 1 o'clock. There'll be speakers from the university, some of the professors there who've done work in this area. They'll be sharing information, people who have personal stories, things like that. So that's what it's about. Yes, ma'am.
Can you tell me how long this event has annually been recognized?
I don't know if it's an annual event. We reached out to them, and they said this is something that they had going on, and we just sort of plugged in with them. Yeah. So I'm not sure if it's an annual event or not. So that's that for me. Were there any other announcements or communications? Ms. Putnam?
There's something I'd like to communicate, and my colleague Bill Brown will help me if I don't concisely state the message that was shared with us. Bill, I think you're on the steering committee of the local chapter of the ACLU, aren't you? And I'm a general member. And last Friday, we attended a social event, and a couple of ACLU members who have a long history of involvement with fairness in the courts just asked us this question about what happens after a person has completed his or her jury service. What happens to that person's name? Does it go back in to the pool to perhaps be drawn the very next time there's a need for jurors? And these people, and they were Esther Pat and Shirley Stillinger, were thinking that if those names are taken out of the pool, then there would be less likelihood that jurors would be repeat jurors, and that everybody would get a chance to serve once without some people serving a second, third, fourth, and fifth time. I see Mr. Turner is nodding his head because I think you have the distinction of being of our membership the person who has served most. No?
I don't think so.
Oh, but haven't you been on, weren't you chosen something like five or six times?
Not five or six. Oh. I was questioned several times.
Right, have you received? Right. Okay. And Bill, that if you can restate what I said more clearly, that would be fine.
I think you stated it pretty clear. It's mostly just, yeah, I think Roger understands.
Roger?
Yeah, what I was going to bring up that was on the agenda, but apparently it is in this way. I received from Bill a list of questions that I think came out of the top conversations at the meeting that Jennifer was referencing. I'll take the questions one at a time. They are brief, and there will be brief responses. Why are there so many duplicates in the list we were given for summonses sent and no response? I asked Kurt Fedwell, who knows much more about the computer system than I ever will. He indicated that there are three possible reasons for that. One is if the summonses were resent because of no response, that it does happen occasionally. The second thing is if you have two people who are in the same household. And the third one is we do get quite a few people who misplace their summonses after they've received them and want a duplicate copy. That was his response, and without talking to, and I just got this email today, so I didn't have a chance to talk to anyone from our judicial systems in Tyler, but that would be the answers that were provided to me. The second question is why, when there are random selections made from either four questionnaires or from summonses, are the selected names marked so they will not be selected again a month later? The answer to that is yes. People are removed from the system, and I shouldn't say it that way. Their eligibility for service is removed for 12 months. So once they, and that's after they actually get a summons and serve, they are removed for 12 months. And then they will be put back in the system automatically.
That's state statute, right?
Yeah, you cannot serve, you're not supposed to serve more than one time in a 12-month period. You're not required to do that, so that's part of it.
So does that mean that if somebody, when you're sending out the summons and you make a random selection from the questionnaire response group, the people that sent back questionnaires, you take a random selection then to send out the summons?
Correct.
You do that
yes.
About every month, right?
The questionnaires go out every week. We send out a few every week.
I'm talking about the summons.
Then the summonses are done once a month, yes.
Okay.
They're done for a particular week, so it depends on, but I believe that the circuit clerk, the way she does it is, she has a group of volunteers who come in and actually do all of the mailing and putting all of the mailings together and getting them sent out.
So once you've sent out the summons, the question is, could the same people get a summons the next month if they didn't respond that month or, two or three months?
I guess it would be theoretically possible, but again, it would be a random draw for that particular period of time. Unless they actually serve, actually show up and serve, their names are not removed. That's my understanding.
Matt, did you want to comment about this? Or
the eligibility, is it possible to extend it beyond 12 months, like 2 years, 3 years?
What do you mean?
Instead of removing their eligibility for 12 months, could you remove their eligibility for 2 years or 3 years?
Well, we certainly don't want to remove people who are willing to serve and who have served before, other than what they're statutorily required to be out in the 12 months. I would have to look at the statute to give you the direct answer, but that is, to the best of my knowledge, that is the standard protocol for Illinois, not just in Champaign.
I understand that it has to be at. I'm wondering, I guess, if it's something that means you could be at least 12 months, or could we, as a county, extend it longer? And the only reason I mentioned that is there are people out there, I think, who don't ever get summons. I could complain, don't ever get a questionnaire, I guess I should say,
and
like to serve, and maybe if they were.
But the numbers that you're talking about are so small, it wouldn't really matter because, it's a completely random selection. So you're talking about thousands and thousands of people who are in the potential pool, and you're talking about removing people who serve. So it's not as many as you think. I don't think it would really make a big difference in whether or not they would be their number would come up again any more quickly.
I guess point of clarification then. So people that get removed from eligibility for 12 months, are those people who were summoned to jury duty but may not have just been on a jury, or those are only people that were on a jury?
They were people who came to the courthouse having been summoned and are paid for jury service.
And they are all.
So it doesn't mean that you actually
got on a jury.
It means that you were actually part of the pool at the courthouse sent to a courtroom to be selected.
What number of people is that per year?
Well, we send out. We summons in about 100, between 125 and 150 a week, so you're looking at 600 a month, 7,000. And we get about 90 who actually show up, usually.
Per week?
Yes. And it's not every week. It depends on, this year we're going to do it over 45 or 46 weeks. Next year it's less because we're trying to cut down on the budget, so we've reduced the number of weeks.
So the word serve is where we're saying that served means basically that you were summoned and came.
Correct.
Okay.
You came, you got a summons, you filled out a questionnaire, you were selected at random to get a questionnaire, you got a questionnaire, you filled it out, you received a summons, you showed up at the courthouse, you were checked in, you received juror orientation, and were there ready to serve on the jury. That's what it means. The third question is there a way of purging old questionnaire responses after a period of, say, 2 years? The answer to that is no. And that has nothing to do with Champaign County. That has to do with the Administrative Office of Illinois Courts, which requires us to keep questionnaires on file for a period longer than 2 years. I believe it's as long as 7 years, and I don't think we've ever gotten rid of them. I think we just keep them.
Who requires that?
The Administrative Office of Illinois Courts. They are the administrative. They are the administrative branch of the Illinois Supreme Court.
But some counties don't even do questionnaires.
Correct. But if you do them, you have to keep them.
And you have to use them for that long, or you just have to keep them on file?
We just keep the actual paper on file for that long. And people, obviously, if someone gets a question, it gets a summons after a long period of time has transpired, and there are changes in their circumstances which would make them unable to serve, they're obviously able to seek out the jury commissioner, call us and let us know that they're unable to serve. Or they can always let people know, too, that their circumstances have changed when they come to court, and if during the voir dire process something has changed. So that information can be updated. Those were the three questions that were posed. Those are the best answers I could give today. There may be more detailed answers we can get further down the road, but that was as good as I could do for a short term.
Now, Bill, you came up with these questions. Do you have any follow-ups for Roger? Are you pretty?
Well, I think just in general, the data, the whole. I think this needs to be done as a small work group. Really, it's not something we can hash out as a committee. And it's not a good use of time, probably. I think if two or three people that are interested could sit down and methodically look at those and maybe call in somebody that has more knowledge of statistics, because I think it sounds like some of that can be a statistical problem, like it ends up in oversampling people that are longer-term residents and things like that.
Well, you have to understand that the jury wheel is updated every year. So the list of individuals is updated every year.
Right, but you're drawing names from questionnaires that have been on file for 7 years.
Well, I don't know if we actually kept them that long, but yeah, that's true that the questionnaires are kept in the system if someone fills out a questionnaire.
So is Kirk available? Could him and Bill work on this? Maybe the three of you spend some time looking at it?
I would have to see what Kirk's schedule is like. Kirk Bedwell, for those of you who don't really know him, is not solely responsible for just the jury system. That's a very small part of what he does every day. His major job is to run the Champaign County Integrated Justice Information System, or JANO system, and that takes up a vast majority of his time. Like I said, the information that I gave you was based on a meeting I had with Kirk late this afternoon with the quickest answer I could give. The only person who would have more information would actually be the vendor, Gary Dower from Judicial Systems, and Gary is based out of Tyler, Texas, so I'm not sure when he will be here. After speaking to Kirk, and I know I'm kind of skipping ahead to number 8, but the update on the questionnaires we're going to have today is going to have to be delayed slightly to get Mr. Dower here in time to do the programming. So we're probably looking at the first quarter of 2010 to get the format that we did put into the computer system.
Okay, so let me do this. The reason why I wanted to, I was asking about Kirk and you guys getting together, because Bill seems to be very interested in it. I think he has something that could be added, you know what I mean? And I don't know how to create that. I know you all are strapped for time, and you're saying Kirk is also. I'm just trying to see how something like this could be put together to see.
It seems to me we've gone over some of these questions more than once, and I think it'd be helpful to have a flow chart that shows us exactly the data process, the process the data goes through, and a diagram and timing. I don't know if we've gotten a clear answer what month we get the list every year, if it changes.
I think maybe we should just hire you and at the courthouse or something like that.
I just think it would be good to sit down and try to get that hammered out so we have it.
Is that possible, Roger? Do you have time to do something like that with Kirk? Well, you'll find out what Kirk's schedule is like, and let's see if that's possible, just so, you know, Bill can have some direct questions with him also.
Sure. I mean, I can definitely check with Kirk and see what his availability is.
Okay, then you guys can maybe hammer that out through the emails or something. Okay. All right. Update on the grant proposal could be really quick. It was turned in November 12th, right?
The 2nd.
November 2nd? Was it
Monday, November 2nd?
Monday,
isn't
November
2nd. Is that seared in your brain?
No.
Well, it is to mine because it was pouring down rain when I took the letter over to Kimberly over at WIL.
Thank you so much.
Yes, indeed. So that's turned in, and we basically will get a response December 15th. And Jenny, being so thoughtful, she always is, she has a card for Kimberly. If you have not signed the card, please do so. So that it can be delivered to Kimberly and show our appreciation for her work on that. And then there'll be, in the future, we'll have some conversation about where we go from here if we do indeed get the grant, if we're successful with the grant. Okay, there were any questions about that, any further questions, comments? Good, hearing none. We're going to number 8, dissemination of the questionnaire, Roger.
First quarter of 2010 will be when the new questionnaires are out, the letter that all of you approved that goes out with the initial questionnaire is already being sent out. It was already done. It's being sent out with every questionnaire. It was done probably right around the first week in November. It was signed by Judge Stefanos and is out with all of the questionnaires. So we wanted a period of time to see if that had any impact anyway. So this will be an opportunity for a few months to go by to see how that goes, and we will see what Mr. Dower's schedule is like to get the reformatted questionnaire put into the computer system.
So the letter that was sent out is a follow-up letter, right?
No, it's the initial letter that goes out with the questionnaire just saying how important jury service is and hoping that they'll fill out the questionnaire. So that's the initial one.
So the initial letter, and Judge Defina's name is signed at the bottom.
Correct, he signed it.
Is there a way to get, like, Judge Claim or somebody? Because I think a lot of people are scared of Defina's. They might just come because they're scared of him or something.
I don't know.
I just wanted to break the ice up a little bit. Y'all seem so tense up in here. Roger and Randy telling all the jokes. Yes, ma'am.
Just for the minutes, because I didn't get it. Roger, what was the date when Judge Defina's, I think, beautiful letter to jurors began to be sent?
It was probably probably the beginning of the second week in November, so I don't know the exact date.
Okay.
But they try to do the once a week, they actually do the folding and the mailing, and I think I gave it to them the day after they had done it for that week, so it was going to be the following week. And so we will monitor and see if that has any impact, but that letter is up.
As he started doing the, starting the first quarter, maybe January, then we'll do the new questionnaire, and then we can see if that also...
Exactly.
Has he started doing, or does he intend to start doing that follow-up, you know, the meeting?
Well, that'll be, like, the third step in the process.
Okay, yeah, he's going to start that, like...
Right, we want to make sure that we have enough time to see whether any of these things are actually having an impact, because everything has a cost associated with it. I mean, the additional letter, not a big deal, but there's more postage involved. And obviously, we don't want to be wasting our time with things that don't work. So we're more than happy to do that. But all that stuff is ready to go in the pipeline. And, again, the reason that the questionnaires take longer is just because we have the format. The way it looks does not mean that the computer system is programmed to pick out the data on those places. And that's what Gary Dower has to do.
And you're looking to, we'll hear back from you as to when he'll come, when?
Probably at the next meeting, if we meet in either in December or if we decide to meet again in January, I'll let you know exactly when he's going to attend. But Kirk Bedwell's been in communication with him and trying to get that worked out. But Gary is pretty much they have a very small operation as far as programmers are concerned, so they can't simply... It's not simply Champaign County that there's their only client. They have clients throughout the country and several in Illinois, so I'm sure he's going to try to make it so that when he travels this way, he handles issues in several counties, not just ours.
And his last name is Gary?
Dower is his last name. I believe it's Dower, and he is with Judicial Systems out of Tyler, Texas.
Judicial Systems. And we refer to him as our vendor.
Yes, Dower is Dower.
Okay. Any questions, any further concerns about that dissemination of the questionnaire? Okay. Number nine. This is the one that everybody's been waiting for. Discuss ways to increase the jury's stipend. Where does the money come from, Pius, for jury stipends?
Well, I assume it comes out of the
general corporate fund money. It's part of the money that's budgeted for the courts every year.
And that's the general answer I get. So there's no specific tax or anything like that. It just says, so it actually comes from the state?
No,
it comes from property taxes and whatever revenues the county brings in. The county adds all that up and divvies it up in the budget that was approved last night, and the courts get a piece of it, and all the other departments get a piece too.
Okay, now I'm a very visual learner. That just ran all property tax
and whatever other revenue, general revenue
tax, sales tax,
right? Mm. Taxes that aren't denoted for a specific purpose go into general revenues that the county takes in.
So okay. It would not include.
So there's
taxes.
this bracket called general revenues, and then is there a set amount that's pulled out, or is that amount of money
budgeted?
So it's budgeted. So, like, on a yearly basis, how much do we budget for jury stipends?
No, I can't recall.
I want to say it's about $120,000.
Yeah,
actually pull it. But, yeah, I don't have it right down in front of me. And it will be less next year because we cut 20 weeks out of the jury term, so we reduced the amount of money.
Is that because of the budget constraints?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll find out. Somebody, I'm sorry, Ms. Miller.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
No, you had your hand up. Go ahead.
I was just wondering if this amount is the same all over the state, or do we know what other counties pay?
Other counties have different stipends. It depends on the county. Some of the collar counties pay more. Some of them, a few even pay less. But for the most part...
How could you pay less?
I think even Randy would agree with this. Probably you never can tell with Randy, but some of the laws in the state of Illinois are very old and archaic and have never been changed, and the jury process and jury stipends are one of those areas that really have never been modernized. And again, it's not something that Champaign County really has any control over. It's more of a state law. It's something that we have to do. And so probably about a year ago or maybe a year and a half ago, within the last year, Judge DeFontis and I went to the county board and asked for the stipend to be increased, and also to increase the mileage, because those are the two things. It was basically driven by the fact that at that time the gas prices were getting close to where they are now again, but it was becoming, actually, people were actually having to pay to go on jury duty because the mileage was not enough to cover the gas that they were actually spending to drive to and from the courthouse. So we were able to convince the county board to increase the stipend, or to increase the amount of money for mileage, but the stipend stayed the same. And I think at the last meeting, although I don't have it with me, I provided everybody with a copy of what it would cost the county to raise the stipend, depending upon, and again, these, and I don't think I had it with me this time, but it was just a spreadsheet that showed how much it costs. But it's a lot of money. No matter what we did, unless we raised it to a large degree, oh, I don't know if it's in this package. This is just the law that I think. Oh, no, here it is. Thank you. We estimate this year that we're going to pay $134,000 in jury costs. This was based on information in September of 2009. If we raise the per diem to $15 from what it is now, it would cost us an additional $67,000. If it was raised to $20, it's $134,000. $25 would cost us an additional $200,000. And to $30, it would cost us an additional $268,000. That's based on the number of days that we pay people for jury service. So it's not a small expenditure, and we really have no other sources that we can target. We depend on our budget from the county board.
Yes. This is the state of the budget. It just was passed.
Correct.
This coming year.
Correct.
What is it?
For this next year, we are reducing it. I can't remember exactly how much we reduced it, but we reduced it by about 20% because we're reducing the number of jury weeks from around 50 to around 40. So in order to make the budget work, because like all the other departments, the courts had to take a 6% cut. One of the things we did was we, Judge DeFano decided to reduce the number of weeks we actually pulled jurors in. Based on his and our conversations, the two of us, we had some weeks where we had holidays in the weeks, so we decided to try to eliminate those because it's, as Randy would tell you too, it's difficult sometimes to have enough days in a week, even no matter when the holiday falls, to actually get a jury trial in that week. So to actually have the jurors come is kind of a waste. So we tried to eliminate those weeks and just kind of set it up so that we reduce the pain as much as we possibly could.
So I wanted to make sure. Yeah, no, go ahead. I wanted to make sure that everyone was absolutely clear on where the money comes from.
It comes from the county, just like any other. The general corporate fund is the big fund that the county has, and we get our funding from them for all of our different costs, including jurors. It's a line item in our budget. Mm-hmm. It's no different than the other expenses that we pay for.
No, and I think I'm getting more and more clear about it, but if I had something in front of me that said property tax, sales tax, because what I'm thinking of is like the quarter cent sales tax. What does that go? What does that come from? What does it go to? Is that something that could be tapped into?
I can find that out for you in a minute. The juror fees is about $150,000.
Right.
In 08, $155,000.
Yeah, and in fact, well, Pius, I'm sorry, while you were gone, we were able to find, we estimated that this year would be about $134,000. But again, it varies because you just never know. And we do the best we can. When we know that we're not going to have juries, not to call them in unnecessarily, not only for the expense, but also not to make sure that individuals don't aren't forced to lose a day's pay when they aren't really needed. So we're very cognizant of that. And a lot of times, for example, we'll call in a special jury, meaning that they can't be done in a period of a week. A lot of times those cases end up getting settled, so instead of having people come in, we simply send them a letter thanking them and put them back in the pool. To try to save the money. So
the estimate is $134,000.
This is the estimate I did based on what was at the end of September. Mm-hmm. That's right. Would be what we will spend this year is $134,000. And if we raise the number from $10 to $15, for example, based on that number of days, it would cost us an additional $67,000. $67,156. $20 would be an additional $134,000, basically it's doubling at $134,311, and onward and upward. And even if you made it, the sad thing is, even if you made it from 10 to 20, I know every dollar matters, but $20 is still an outrage to try to pay somebody for an entire day of being on jury service. There's just no way. And I'm sorry?
It's better than 10. Oh,
yeah, any dollar is better. $1 more is better than, absolutely. And I'm not saying we shouldn't try. I'm just saying that, you know, I think the goal is that, you know, or at least I would wish that at some point in the future people get paid a reasonable rate for doing it, but the county doesn't have the resources and the state certainly doesn't, at least not to the best of my knowledge.
Matt? It would be interesting to see, I'm not sure where you called the information from exactly, but which counties in Illinois pay the most jury stipends, or even which ones pay more than we do, or significantly more. I don't know how you categorize significant.
Yeah. I think that when we talked about this at one of the county board meetings, it might have been a committee meeting. Mm-hmm. Just, I think that Deb Busey had some of the material there, or somebody had that.
I think I produced some spreadsheets a long time ago, but I don't have them with me now.
Where I was going with that is that we might want to, I know it involves the thing now we seem to be doing conference calling. So we'll have a conference call with whatever county it is we're trying to talk to about this and say, I'd be curious to know, okay, well, how long have they been paying that, and what were they paying beforehand, and did they notice any significant change in response rates on jury participation because of, you know, that was a correlation with that increase in the stipend. Because, I mean, that would just be, I think, an interesting thing to pursue.
I think so, too. So
I'm a big fan of not reinventing the wheel. So, I mean, if you're talking to the county, whether they pay the same as us or even less, but certainly if they pay more, you know, asking them, is it coming out of your general corp, or do you guys have some creative ways of coming up with more money, you know, different sources or whatever. So.
print our own.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine.
Bill had
we can certainly do that.
One thing that occurred to me when I was thinking about this was I wonder if we could ask tutors if they wanted to voluntarily give up their stipend to donate to a pool that would be given to the to other tutors, so you could increase the tutor stipend over time as you added to this pool of donated money.
You'd also have to figure out who is, you know, who deserves to get the money. I mean, there's, as much as I like the idea, I think that you have to be careful about that, because then someone has to make a determination whether, you know, if
I'm saying we would keep the stipend the same, a set amount,
right,
but, and not increase it maybe the first year. The first year this pool of accumulated donations would go up, and then the next year you'd look at the pool and say, well, we can increase it $10 because we have this much money.
Okay, I think that's fine. The one downside of that is that one of the benefits from working with a larger employer is that in exchange for you turning in your $10 check or $50 check, they will pay you your regular salary. So for those people who work for the major employers, they're not going to be able to donate to your pool because they have to give their money back in order to get their regular pay.
I did look at the UI regulations on that, and UI doesn't want your money. They say keep both. So
right. That's the rarity, though. I mean, a lot of other places, I know Carl, when I worked there,
really?
They would take the check. The county wants its own money back if you work for the county. So.
Yeah, I worked at the university, and I served. I just didn't tell them the bottom line, but I know that's the regulation. You don't have to give it back. Ms. Miller?
Well, when you work for the schools, for instance, you give the money back to the school and you get paid, but maybe some employers would be willing to forego that money, and that could go into a pool.
Well, I think that we would certainly have to be open to any ways to increase the stipend, because all the work that we've been doing thus far does a lot of good work, very good work. When the rubber meets the road, though, there's still this becomes an issue of finance, and some people just, even with all the changes that we've made, they're going to say, I just can't afford to serve, you know. So I think this is going to sort of really be the meat and potatoes of what we can get accomplished with this committee. If there's any sort of creative ideas, any sort of ways to generate some more money, we should at least explore them all and say we've exhausted every possibility that we possibly could.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ms. Putnam?
Well, I think when our court administrator brought us the short description of House Bill 4002 a couple of meetings ago, that to me, this is what you asked the state legislature for us. I don't know if anyone has a representative other than Naomi Jacobson or a state senator of us, a senator other than Mike Frerichs. Let's see, Chicken Rose is also is a representative.
Western Champaign County.
Right. But that, you know, I'm like Bill, I think an appropriate work group of one or two people set up a meeting with our legislators and ask what their interest is in taking whatever ball House Bill 4002 is and running with that.
We have to be careful because there were certain parts of that bill that we didn't like
right.
Making failure to
a
misdemeanor or a failure to serve. So that's something that nobody wants.
Mm-hmm. I'm on a Bar Association committee that reviews statutes like this, and I brought this up with a bunch of judges and other people from around the state, and they were thinking of ways to change that law because they thought it was too harsh too. So I'd be happy to be on this working committee if you want. But if we're going to meet with Frerichs or Jacobson or somebody else, there are a couple of other ideas that we've talked about over the last few months that I think are also important. For example, perhaps increasing the eligibility pool, not just voters and driver's license people, but perhaps valid for your college ID holders and those things. And particularly our representatives would be interested in that. So. So it's not just that law and that bill that we should talk to them about, but other stuff as well.
Okay. So, Pius, do you think you'd be interested in working with Randy and Jenny on that?
I can't do that unless I have county board says I can do it. So, no.
Okay.
In fact, none of the county board members can really do that unless we've been sanctioned by the county board.
Okay.
Well, maybe that could happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, that'll have to happen first.
And so you just need to present it to them and
vote? Well, that's what the policy.
Or Jenny and I could talk to them and see if they're even interested in that topic. Yeah. If they are, then...
I would suggest you to explore first.
We can even invite them to a meeting. I mean, at some point, after you guys break the ice with them, maybe you can invite them to a meeting and then corner them into, you know, talking to them about these things.
But I like Randy's idea of if we are granted an interview or a meeting with our legislative representatives to talk about more than just the per diem, but also ways that we could broaden the pool and any other things that we can have to maximize the value of our time with them.
Well, one of the things you might want to do is do something in writing to them indicating what the issues are, and then even if you guys don't get a chance to meet with them face-to-face first, give them the ideas of what these are things we want to talk about, and then say, can you make one of the next three meetings and give them meeting dates and times and see if they can come here. At least that way they'd have a heads up of what we were talking about, and even if that way you couldn't actually arrange a face-to-face meeting with them, you could, you know, maybe give them a heads up and get them to come to the meeting with all of us.
So now I'm just trying to make sure that I'm clear. I don't know about others, but A, again, where the money comes from. A actual, so I can say property tax, sales tax, and is that it? Or it could be tickets, whatever generates money for the county, right?
Pius can give you the exact, I'm going to be right back.
Pius, comes from property taxes, 22%. Sales and income taxes, 28%. So that's half of it right there. State shared revenue.
State shared.
Yeah, money from the state.
Okay.
10%. License and permits, 5%. Grants, 2%. Fees and fines, 16%. And interfund revenue, 4%. Don't ask what that is because I can't remember.
So that was it. Property tax, sales tax, state license and permits, grants, fees.
Grants. Fees and fines.
Fees and fines.
I have the feeling that Pius's answer to the question might be where does all the money for the general corporate fund come from?
Yeah.
But if it's a grant, we couldn't take a grant, for example, if the RPC got a grant to study wind.
Well, you wouldn't use a grant to for fees anyway. Yeah, because it has to be short term. So it would have some.
So I would omit grants when I.
Well, I'm just saying that that's money goes into the general corporate fund.
Well, I think she's addressing something that I have written down here as actually item C. What other sources could be tapped for an increase, like the property tax, which is already there. 25 the quarter cent sales tax. I've asked this question over and over again. Is
you want to know the answer for that?
Yeah.
The public safety sales tax, established in 1998, thanks to Jenny's vote. Its uses are basically approved by the Champaign County Board. Basic uses: debt payments for the bonds issued for construction and remodeling of the Champaign Courthouse and the Juvenile Detention Center, and to abate property taxes for payment of the bonds issued for the construction of satellite jail and remodeling the downtown correctional center. So the main reason was for
remodeling,
building or upkeep of the courthouse, jails, etc. They've also approved 5% of the revenues to go to the delinquency prevention program. And that's $200,000 plus a year. They also spend about $600,000 or so to pay for the utilities of those buildings. And it also pays for the general...
I'm going to turn the lights off or something, man.
No, actually, it doesn't pay for these.
We have a de-lamping plan.
Yeah, we have a de-lamping plan.
We do turn the lights off.
And there also pays for the Jano system. And that's about it.
So basically, you're saying it's pretty strapped there. Does that save y'all money over there, the D-Lamp system?
I haven't started yet.
We've actually started our own kind of voluntary one when all the employees realized how bad the county's financial straits were. Lots of people have turned out the lights. We keep as little lights on as possible. the lights in my office are off and I'm sleeping. I mean, the lights are off in my office, and I have a couple of small lamps that I use to try to keep energy costs down. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, I have to run.
Okay.
Y'all
thank
have
you very much, Roger.
We'll communicate whether or not we haven't voted on whether or not we're going to meet, but we'll make sure.
Yeah, either way, in all honesty, either way is fine with me. I can make a meeting if we have one.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Roger. So, quarter cent sales tax is basically a general for, and it's whatever the county board approves. So, if the county board
right.
wanted to approve.
Well, primarily, the original approval is paid for the courthouse.
Is that paid for yet?
No. It'll be 20 years or something like that.
Oh, really? So, I kind of like the old one. There's less people in it.
Well, it's a smaller building.
So, okay.
Total
so,
the bonds get paid off, well, it depends on something 2012, 2018, 2029, 2027. Depends when the work is done.
2012. So there's some spots in there. I guess that if we really, I don't know, if the Janos system or any, we wouldn't ask for any money from the delinquency programs, I don't think. The bills could possibly be a little bit less, but basically all the money is spoken for in quarter cent sales tax.
There is a fund balance, a part of the fund balance, so I can't figure out, I don't know the county well enough, but figure out you know how much it makes every he saves every year I guess in fund balance. I could look it up but
so
again it has to be appropriated by the county board though.
Approved by the county board and there is some fund balance. But that's not something that would be there consistently. That's what we would look
well,
for.
Well it depends
right?
on depends you know, I guess it depends on the exception.
Now the quarter cent sales tax is a sales tax, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how is that different than a sales tax that's already in
well this is a special sales tax.
Can we make another special sales
public,
tax?
Public safety sales tax. It was passed by a countywide referendum.
You think we could do that again?
That was the sales tax that was dedicated to the specified uses. Mm-hmm. Anti-recidivism, for example, programs to keep the revolving door from revolving. And that was passed by voters the year that the referendum was approved to construct the new courthouse. Mm-hmm. On the historic courthouse square in downtown Urbana.
Well, I'm just wondering, okay, so if you approve something like that, then you can approve something like that again. It's possible.
And sure, anything's possible.
Okay. Because we need something that's going to be a long-term sort of thing, and $20 a day is still nothing, like Roger said before he left, so... I mean, I just really wanted to start this discussion. We don't have to spend a whole bunch of time on it.
Well,
I wanted to start this discussion, though.
I have something to contribute to that discussion. Another avenue to advance along might be encouraging and thanking those companies that are able to grant jury leave to their employees. I mean, this has been brought up before in this room. That we could have like an honor roll, work with the Chamber of Commerce, and you know we could tie it in with Law Day, the day when that's May 1st. I mean, if we wanted to have a publicity campaign, a public education campaign around that, trying to time up with May 1st, that would be a logical time. If at the last meeting when we were talking about. How, assuming or if we get the grant and we produce this first class video, how would it be used? And Roger suggested Law Day is the logical time to do it. And maybe we could aim for a May 1st campaign of recognizing businesses that include a jury leave along with military leave or bereavement leave, holiday leave, paid vacation.
I wonder if we could also put that on our legislative agenda to see if there's some kind of state tax credits available to companies to offer jury leave.
That's brilliant.
A couple more comments about public safety sales tax. Through the last, say, 06 to 08, it looks like there's been a surplus of, say, $200,000, $300,000. However, I don't know if that's the same right now. I'm not sure. I think the revenues
are
dropped.
Down.
I think it's actually, they could be, the fund balance could be dropping. fund balance is about $4 million, $5 million. However, they have to have $4 million, $200,000 in there because of a bond covenant. So they've had up as high as $6 million, but it's dropping now.
I'd like to at least, just like we're testing these other things, even if we had a fund balance or something like that, if the county board approved $134,000, right, to increase it from 10 to 20, what impact would that have? You know what I mean?
Well, we project it out.
Well, I'm just saying, so if we tried it and said, hey, let's see if it went from $10 to $20, would that increase minority participation? You know, if it went to $30 a day, whatever it was, and so if it was just a 1 year or 2 year grant, then just as a test case.
Try for a grant, yeah, that'd be better off trying for a grant, actually.
I'm not sure if the questionnaire or the summons tells you how much you earn a day, does it? Do they?
Oh.
I think it's something they find out when they show up. Or
they probably don't want to tell you.
So they're either going to show up or not.
Yeah.
You know,
but they don't really know that.
Oh, wow, it changed from 10 to 20. I'm happy to have it here, but I don't think it will encourage more people to show up because they don't know the amount yet.
Well, it's a good question. I wonder how many people even know how much it is anyway.
Most people know it's not much, I think.
Right.
I guess I'm thinking from the perspective of, you know, my ears to the ground and knowing a lot of the folks in the black community. Is it the money that's discussed when we say, hey, you know, you got jury duty? Oh man, I'm paying me no $10 a day. I'm not going. I don't know if that's the real discussion. Actually, it's a good. I mean, it's something you just made me think about.
Right. You talked about getting some of the, I don't know what they're called exactly, the jury administrators were there on Monday morning. It's a couple of women who have a job there, and they kind of take in all the potential jurors. But I think they would have a real good pulse on exactly why people are asking to be excused. And just anecdotally, my experience was that people were lined up, but they had job commitments. That from what I was overhearing, that was their primary concern. But it would be good to have them, and we talked about getting them into one of our meetings to get some feedback from them.
Matt and then Ken.
I think Ken Saltman has spoken.
No, Ken. Thank you. Go ahead.
I was just saying, young man here is my nephew. He's in engineering at U of I. He was summoned in Danville, I believe.
Yeah.
And he was like shaking in his boots, and he actually went over to Danville during finals, I think. He got a big test for
him. He was probably the first round of tests. I think it was like in early October.
So, but he asked me on what he should do. And then eventually I just talked to him and said, man, you got to do whatever you think is in your best interest. So he went on over to Danville and went to the courthouse and stated his case and was allowed to be
excused.
Mm-hmm. So, but just like this young man here is saying, you know, some of those things that come up with students and things like that. I mean, it's just, you know, students' job. A lot of barriers there when it comes to serving or not serving. Excuse me.
Matt and then Ms. Miller.
Yeah, I mean, and this is, we may be getting into the realms of being ponderable here, but let's say, you know, in a fantasy world, let's say we could afford to just pay jurors whatever their daily pay would break out to be. We were good for it, and they knew that. I wonder, like, would there still be people who, given the types of job that they have or whatever, they just still would be like, well, I can't do it. My workplace or my job is not. I can't do it. You know. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
I mean, I've always thought about a living wage and all that kind of different stuff. If you pay people that amount, would that make a difference? I guess the money issue is only a difference. It makes a difference only if you get selected, right? I mean, that's where most of the issue has been, is how do you even get there? You know what I mean? Get to the courthouse and be summoned or to be randomly chosen. That's where a lot of this begun in the beginning, because although we may change the amount, you know, maybe Pius getting all the money. You know what I mean? Or somebody who does not have an economic hardship just starts to get more money, but the people who were saying that we wanted to get to serve never even make it there to make a determination whether or not it's money that's an issue for them. You see what I mean? So I don't know if I said that real eloquently, but I think it was understood. Ms. Miller had a statement then.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Jones going to say that there are two places where people get excused from jury duty, and they're actually supposed to go to the jury commissioners, and I've sat in on that, and a lot of people, there's people that it would be a hardship for them. They're taking care of somebody who's dependent on them, or they don't get paid if they're self-employed, and they don't get paid. And the other way is that a lot of people actually report for jury duty and then say that they can't serve because they wouldn't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So you see it in both places.
Ms. Miller, could you tell us when the jury commission meets again?
I'm not sure.
I know we were asked to come.
I think it's once. Is it once a month?
Yeah, once a month.
The last time I think was October 14th.
I don't
so
think
it probably was just held.
Yeah.
I will contact the commissioner with whom I'm most acquainted, the person who works here at Brookins in the front desk is Wanda Adams. I'll just ask her because I just happen to know her. And then I'll list ask what their schedule is for the coming year. But Joan, I just wanted to ask you. You just stated your observations of people stating that they've been summoned, and on maybe the second or third day, they say, "I can't continue to come because of my child care problem or my I can't leave work." Was that something you observed at the jury commission or while you were observing as a League of Women Voters watcher?
I did both. I observed as a League of Women Voters court watcher. I observed the jury commission, and I also observed the jury pool reporting for jury duty on the first day. And again, I saw people who reported for jury duty but said, "I can't serve. It would be a hardship."
Oh, were they excused?
They were excused.
I thought you had to be excused when you report in this room to that three-person commission.
You do, but people don't understand that. And I think one thing that impressed me was both places, they're treated with respect, and the jury commissioners and the two women that greet the jury, the people when they report for jury duty, I mean, both, you know, are very respectful and very understanding. People have a problem.
Okay. I don't know, Bill, Randy, you can start first.
Yeah, just to make it very clear, you know, if you get a summons or a questionnaire and you want to try and get off jury duty, you're supposed to go to the jury commission once a month. You go in there, there's three people, you go in there, you tell them your sob story, and most of the time they let you off. Some people don't do it, don't realize they're supposed to do it, and then they show up for the first day of the jury term. They have a one-week jury term, they're supposed to show up on that first Monday. And that's when they go to the courthouse and they see one of those two ladies, like Shirley Marshall, whatever, and they go, "You know, I really can't do it this week." And they're not supposed to excuse them, but sometimes they do. But there's a third time, say they show up for that Monday, they don't ask to be excused then they actually go into a courtroom, and then they, you know, they beg and plead with the judge or whatever to get off. So those are the three different types of ways you can get off. But I just wanted to comment briefly about the money thing. Anecdotally, I mean, I try a lot of cases, and I don't know what percentage it is, but it is a significant percentage of jurors who don't earn any money. Either they're unemployed because they're laid off or fired. A lot of them are stay-at-home moms. We get a lot of retired people. They have incomes, you know, whatever, but they're not. So a significant portion of the people who are in there, you know, aren't earning anything. So if you get $10, $15, $20 a day, it's more than they're making then. So.
Okay.
There's a majority of people who are working and would be making more than what they're getting on the jury service.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't make anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bill?
Well, that just made me think of something else. It could be that they're being selected because the people that have jobs have already asked to get off.
That's exactly
right.
Exactly right.
And I forgot what I was going to say before that. I'm sure it had something to do with statistics, so it's important.
Wind farms. Money from
property tax.
I just had a thought. Maybe, Joan, the League of Women Voters and the College of Law, maybe they should be observing the jury commission and asking how, when people are in the trials, maybe we should ask Beckett and Gonzalez if they would include a feature where you're observing people who ask to be excused from jury service.
Well, we could do that. The League could do that. But those students have to spend 12 hours watching jury trials, and, you know, with all they've got to do, I don't think we could ask them to do any more.
I don't think you have to have research on this. I'm guessing that the jury commission knows, or they keep statistics. I'm guessing how many people come in every month to ask it off, and I don't know if they categorize the reasons why. And, you know, the percentage that they say, yes, you're off, and no, you're not off, and is it financial or family or whatever, but it would be a simple question to ask them. They probably already keep those stats.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Trish brought us what the excuses are. As I recall, I don't think I brought it with me, but I don't think that it's an allowable excuse to say I can't afford to work for $10 a day.
No,
I don't think that was an allowable excuse.
Well, they don't say that.
But they say I won't get paid if I serve my jury duty.
Isn't economic hardship one of the excuses? But maybe you could ask your friend that's on the commission if they keep any statistics.
Okay.
And you said the wind farms is property tax?
Wind farm, yeah. It'll be a new additional farm property taxes. Each wind farm, the tower itself is taxed. So we'll see an increase in revenue in property taxes. However, you know, that will not occur until you have an operating wind farm in 4 to 5 years from now. Maybe four. And of course, there'll be other people want to factors I talk about now. These are some of my other things.
Well, we first, so just make sure y'all know.
We'll be second, actually.
Second. I mean, but priority wise.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but again, that's all assuming we have wind farms.
Right.
Right now, there's nothing there.
Well, I knew it was something that was out there, so I thought I'd.
But it'd be like, it's treated like new construction, so.
Okay. Ms. Kessel?
I'm thinking about university students. Ever since Ken brought that up, I think that for most university students, a difference between $10 and $15 or $10 and $20 would be more important than to people who are working. And looking at the graduate students' annual income, you know, recently,
mm-hmm.
It would be significant. But the biggest problem is what Ken was saying, that of not being able to miss a test,
right, yeah.
Or papers are due, or whatnot.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if it's possible to encourage the university to make a ruling or a statement that students could not be penalized by their professors if they served on jury duty. In other words, the teacher would have to provide the test at a later point or give them a chance to make the paper in later. I know as a person who's taught in community college that if somebody had an accident, was in the hospital, you couldn't flunk them. You know, you're required to make some provision for them. So why is that a way we could go? Because I think even though university students are not mostly minorities, there are some, but I think it's a group that Bill showed us we're missing. Youth. You know, people tend to be older, partly because of the retirement thing that Randy was just referring to, and I think it would be a significant diversity if we just had more access to university students.
I was just wondering, how do we do that? You have young man from the public. We can do that, right? We can call on the public, can't we?
Sure.
Okay.
Join in.
I think it would have been a good experience for him at the age that he is now. And see how things work and see what goes on in a courtroom, whether I'm being surprised like I was at 35 and like, dang, what is this?
Mm.
Since he's, 20, it'd been a good experience for him. But then again,
the hardship.
I'm trying to say of him missing school and then having, and his mind wouldn't have been there. His mind wouldn't have been there. He'd been like, whatever the leader of the jury was saying, he just went like this, trying to get back to Champaign.
Uh-huh,
to
uh-huh.
So he's speaking for you accurately, you think?
Pretty much.
Okay,
I want to
make sure.
Like, pay isn't as much of an issue. I think it's time. Professors, I mean, they wouldn't really, I think jury duty is like a legitimate excuse. They wouldn't penalize you for, you know, civil duties or stuff like that. But the problem is if, like, it's an extended thing or I miss a couple weeks, I can't make that back. So maybe I can take the test later, but I may fail it or something. And I was selected for a grand jury, actually. And if I had been in a grand jury,
that's
if I missed like an entire month, I could miss the whole semester. I might have to take everything over. And then you lose like thousands of dollars in college tuition. So time can really be a much bigger issue to a college student, especially a grad student, rather than the money.
I don't know if this would help, but you can choose to serve at a different time. Teachers do that, and
yeah,
students do that.
Yeah, definitely.
And I don't think jurors are told this, but let's say you're available to do jury duty this week. You're set for next week, and you show up on Monday. But then on Monday, you realize, you know, your in-law has some medical appointment on Wednesday, and you have to take them. You can actually tell the jury person, I'm free this whole week, but Wednesday I can't. And so when you get into the courtroom, you tell that to the judge, and most people are okay. You know, they won't have the person show up on Wednesday. So I don't know if jurors are told that if they have they want to serve that week, but they may have a conflict with a particular day, they can let the people know.
Mm.
So, is it possible to say, I'm thinking of what this young man just said, is it possible to say when you show up, I can serve for 2 days, that's all, and then you get sent to a place where they're having those kinds of trials that are over with real quick? You know?
Well, because you don't know how long the crowd is going
to last. What court you go to, how long they'll last. You're better off saying, I'm available every day but this one, then I'm going free.
But the average trial is within a week, right?
There rarely would a trial go into a second week. Most trials, honestly, are done in 2 days.
That's what I thought.
Sometimes one, yes.
Matt, this will be clear. You can't, let's say, you can't have a three-day trial and have a juror miss, like, day two, right?
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But, like, if somebody is not available for a Tuesday, they come in for the jury orientation on a Monday, they won't have them come back on Tuesday. They'll just at the earliest say, come on Wednesday. Right.
Ms. Putnam.
Ken, I know you introduced your family member at the beginning, but I don't remember.
I'm sorry, that's my nephew.
Right.
Jordan Turner.
Jordan, I'm the minute taker, and I just wanted to, J-O-R-D-A-N.
Yes.
Okay. Jordan, can I ask, when you're... experience. Were you summoned for a trial in Champaign Circuit Court?
No, I was actually. This was for Vermilion County.
Okay.
So this is like my situation. I think would have been really odd because if I'm going back to Danville for a grand jury trial, there's no way I could have academics off of that.
Right. But and then are you a student at UIUC?
Yes.
Okay.
So
what did you...
Yes, because my driver's license had Danville on it, I was picked in the jury selection in Danville, not Champaign.
So when you were summoned, then you went to the Vermilion County, their court commission,
yes,
and told them for you it would be a hardship.
Yes.
But hopefully your name was put back in that pool and they will call you in the future.
I think they... said that I would at least have a year off, since I was on a grand jury and they were trying to make me serve for a grand jury, that I would have at least 1 to 2 years.
Jordan, are you registered to vote here or in Danville?
I think I have registered to vote here, but they went by the driver's license after voting registration.
Well, I mean, this is one of the things that Bill talks about all the time, so that you could actually get called here too, because as long... Yes,
you need to change your address on your driver's license. You go to the Secretary of State website and change it to you.
That's true. I just wasn't sure about college.
Well, I'm just saying that from a statistical standpoint of people being called twice and all that kind of stuff. Okay, y'all, I think we've pretty much exhausted number 9 enough for tonight. Number 10 was just old business about, and I'm sorry, I shouldn't just do that. Is everybody... clear on them. See,
I have one more thing before we leave this discussion. I want to ask Bill Brown, because you have a current affiliation with the university, could you send me electronically the page in the university personnel or employment manual or whatever they call it that specifies how the U of I deals with jury leave? And I can provide the group with the policies that a couple of other companies have. And then if you'd like to put that on the agenda for an upcoming meeting, we can look at 3 or 4 representative policies. Oh, the one that the county has, too, I think is exemplary. But I think, Bill, from the policy that governs you as a U of I employee, we could think about ways we could ask, as Barbara suggested, the university to adopt a policy of not penalizing students who who answer the call to serve.
I can see if there's a written policy on
okay.
that, too.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, from a delegation of responsibility standpoint, I'm looking at you, Matt. Other counties, people who bring up the ideas, I ask them to sort of look into them.
Well, I saw those.
Yeah. You almost slipped by. Could you find some of that out for us? What other counties pay? I mean, just in the general vicinity.
Actually, I have that information from it came up in the Justice and Human Services Committee in the last 2 years.
And oh, so you have it?
Okay. In one of my
charts. You send it to Matt and he'll bring it here so it looks like he did some homework?
Oh, well, I'll just go through my... No, it's not my memory. It's the pieces of paper I drag around with me.
Okay. So you'll have that for us for
and
the next meeting.
Deb Busey got that stuff for us.
And you can have it for us next meeting? Yeah?
Yep.
You sure?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Number 10, old business. This was really, I wanted Judge DeFantis to be here, and since he and Roger have left, I thought it would still be good, since we went for the grant for the video stuff, I thought it would still be good to go back and revisit the radio ads and get some of that going as well, and let's see. Because although we really want to see what works best, the overall objective is to get more results. So I do think that's something we should revisit once the judge comes back and him and Roger here.
Could you remind me what the status of that is? Are they currently playing on the radio? Or do you have
no, there's nothing on the radio at this particular point.
He offered money to pay for a certain amount.
Right. He said they had about $900 raised so far, you know, and Pius said he would donate a couple thousand.
No problem.
If you have an audio track or MP3 of an ad, I can take it to the ACLU board and see if they would kick in some money.
You got that?
Yeah. It's come up before, too.
Yeah.
Bill has said that before.
Yeah. You have. Is there an ad produced yet? Or
no, it's not. No, I think that this is...
Once you get something, that would be...
See, that's the whole thing, is where to produce it. I know we can do some of it, maybe at the IMC, you think? Yeah. So we need to do an ad. But this ad is just more like, does it need to be approved by the county board or anything like that?
Funny is not county board funding, no. Where's money coming from? Outside sources.
Yeah, okay. So then...
What's coming from... part of it's coming from DePontis, but I don't know if that's General Corp. It might be
heritage
fund
it's
or some
just
other.
Just money, so.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question about this money that the judge obtained. Now he said, and I just thought this was so cute. It is from the marriage fund. You know what the marriage money is? When people get married in a civil court, there's a fee. I don't know what it costs to get married, like on your lunch break. But there's a wedding fund, and a person asked me, and you know I told this individual that it was Kim Cronick, mm-hmm. because I was just telling her some of the background of this, and she thought that was fascinating that this it was a good use for the wedding money. But Randy, do you know what other uses are made of the wedding money?
It's really Judge Schonkweiler. Is the chief of the circuit, you know, our county, Piatt, a couple of other mm-hmm. counties, mm-hmm. and he has to authorize its use.
Uh-huh.
So I think it can be for virtually anything.
Okay.
I don't know if there is any use as it relates to marriage at all. I mean, they don't produce the certificates, they don't serve, you know, nothing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I know Judge Blackman, when he does the weddings on Valentine's Day, he decorates his courtroom in pink. But other than that, I don't know of what it's used for at all.
It would just be something interesting, wouldn't it, to pursue?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a slush fund, although mm-hmm. there are lots of county funds that uh-huh. seem to be used for things, uh-huh. you know, in strange uh-huh. ways. But it can be used for anything,
right.
literally, if Judge Schonkweiler approves
right.
it.
Well, I know another source of those dollars
I guess that's the definition
is,
of slush fund, isn't
and
it?
Judge DeFantis stated this, is that he took up a collection at a bar association meeting. And well, I was wondering if we could create a 401, 501(c) foundation. then if the contributions were tax exempt, that might encourage people to make those contributions.
That must be the way it's defined.
That might be true. I know the Illinois State Bar Association gives out up to $500 grants to legal groups or for legal purposes. And I know the bar the local bar association will contribute to organizations. So I bet between the State Bar Association and the Champaign County Bar Association, you could probably come up with
$750,000.
Right. Well, Randy, could you make sure they come up with that for us?
Oh, yeah, sure.
But,
make a call.
But still, the first thing is to have a decent ad.
Yeah, so I'm going to work on the ad. And if anybody wants to work on it with me, that's fine. But I'm just going to actually sit down and sort of write it out, go through it, possibly get some nice hardcore Scarface music, go behind it, you know, and publish it. Get something together.
Could
and
you
then
do
I'll,
a rap? Couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll do something, and I'll bring it back. I have something for us to go on, whether it's just a written text or maybe something, an audio or something that we could try. I'll work on that. New business. We were talking about inviting the legislators. I spoke with a couple of ministers at the Ministerial Alliance, and I know some people don't know that the Ministerial Alliance is there's some other pastors here that I listed that are not a part of that, who have some of the larger congregations and stuff in town, Gwen, Tatum, and Savage. So I thought about inviting them to the next meeting, but I didn't know what you guys thought about that. What do you all think about that? As far as getting them involved and sort of how could they make jury service as a part of their rotation, maybe their mission or whatever, getting it out to their congregations and their membership. I thought just having them come and maybe discuss it.
Seems like good.
You know.
You might want to probably, I think, schedule for their part.
Schedule for?
Find out what their schedules are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're more likely to have something going on Friday evenings.
Okay.
January probably easier for them than December.
Okay. Christmas. Okay, so we'll look. So we'll shoot for January if they can make it. Mm-hmm. But you all think it's a good idea?
I would say find out what their schedules are, then we can figure out when to meet.
Okay.
Would you be opposed to having one of the jury commissioners come at the same meeting? Is that too much to do at one meeting?
Depends on what's on the agenda.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I think this would be good just to increase our visibility among the community and just to get folks talking about us. So if we did have an active and engaged meeting with the jury commissioner, I think that'd be useful.
I would suggest any meeting that we have like that with, especially if you have like this ministerial alliance, if you have two or three of them, you have a meeting there, just because I think that room is more conducive to.
Yeah. I was going to say a word, but I forget I shouldn't say it on tape. I'll say it when we get done.
Okay.
No, I hear you. In the bigger room for that meeting. Okay. So I'll find out the schedules. I'll talk to
you. I feel very kind of lost in that other room. This room is much more engaging, like the kitchen table. To me,
it's Jenny K. Putnam room.
No, it has to do with the configuration and the space. The other room, it feels like you're attending the United Nations or something. It's not made out for discussion. It's like for everybody's facing the front.
I thought this room was not as conducive to that, but
oh boy.
I mean, for us,
but this isn't on the
agenda,
y'all. So can
I think for us, generally, it's fine. But I mean, if we have guests coming in, because if they want to sit over here, I mean, that's good for me. For you and Randy,
mm-hmm.
I mean, then you guys are your backs are turned to them. Same if they were sitting back here, or I don't know.
Yeah,
and then it's almost, I don't know. But we shouldn't get into the big.
I appreciated Barbara bringing it up. When Jenny K. Putnam was a member of that 27-member group, she really disliked sitting in the front row and having her back to the people behind. Feeling rude, because I had my back, and then I'd turn around and talk to the people, and then I have my back to the people in the front. I don't like the horseshoe arrangement.
Okay, well, next thing on that.
I was going to point out that, for the record, that
Everybody says they don't like it, but when I've tried to change the orders like that, they always say no.
What? So y'all open up a whole other thing.
I'm trying to rearrange it.
Point of order, let's bring this meeting back. I'll find out. I have a meeting tomorrow with the Ministerial Alliance. I'm on their agenda tomorrow morning at 11:30. I don't know how many of them will be there, but I will talk to them and ask them to find out if they could fax me or, email me or call me with their schedules for December and January, and we'll see where we go from there. And I'll email you guys and to make sure that's clear. I'm sorry, did you have something?
Yeah, but it's not in order.
Okay, sorry.
So it's going back. For when you do put your ad together or something, I highly recommend this group of definitions that I believe Judge Stefanis gave us. This could be a book that the jurors could be given on orientation day. Does this look familiar to people?
Yeah, he gave us that. I'm sure I have.
Put your hands on it. It's three pages, and of course it's in type that's too small for anyone to read right now, but this would be very good on which to build your ad, or when we stylize the orientation video that currently has Judge Ladd and the Uniformed Court Security Officer reading from the script, and instead has you or Patricia Avery or Patrick Thompson reading that very same script, you might also want to put in some of this information.
Okay. So, next meeting. Does everyone feel comfortable with December 18th? Are we going to skip December and come back in January, early January? If we skip December, my proposal is that we meet twice in January.
Okay. Well, let's not skip December.
Well, what should we see about? Do you think the ministers would be able to come in January or in December?
December 18th.
Oh, no, it's not. It's too close to Christmas. It's way too close.
It's a whole week before. I mean, you know.
A week before Christmas.
Suppose that we make invitations to both a jury commissioner and the Minister Alliance and see if either of those works out or one of the other.
So you said invite both and see who can make it, make the jury commission can. Yes, sir.
If we get that grant, I think a December meeting would be really important.
Oh, yeah, we need, if we get the grant, we have to have a meeting.
Yeah, which I would just say that, I don't know exactly what then, where we would then proceed from that point, but if we don't get the grant, that would suck, but if we do get it, we'd obviously know by December 18th. My concern is that we just, I don't want to pack too much into that agenda, because if we get the grant, we're all excited on December 18th, and we want to talk about that a lot. We've got guests, as well, then I guess we could have the grant proposal talk afterwards, but we also don't want to have a lot of the guests, take up a good portion of the meeting, which is not bad, but, the bulk of the meeting's done there, and then we still have really cool.
No, that's real, because if we bring in the ministers, and some of them can be a little long-winded sometimes, occasionally, and we're actually trying to hash out something, it could probably take up the majority of the meeting, so that would be something. So we would let's shoot for January with the ministers, and let's go with the jury commission for December. That way, either way it goes. So so December 18th we in, right? Okay, so December 18th.
What's your intention to invite just one jury commissioner? Because I would say,
invite them all.
All three?
Let them have the right of first refusal.
And Annis would probably not come. But I think if Jean and Wanda came, that would be
they'd be a great
helpful.
Duo. Mm-hmm.
And you should also invite, I think you should invite not just those commissioners, but Shirley Marshall, she's the one who handles the jurors every Monday. I don't remember the name of the other lady.
Do you think she'd want to give up an evening? Or, well, I should.
Well,
I should say no. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So I will invite all three commissioners and Shirley Marshall. And they can say no.
Okay. So that's settled. Public participation.
Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you very much.
Now you're on Thanksgiving break.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're on YouTube now too.
Well, I'm on YouTube during.
Oh, okay. All right.
Are we adjourned?
No public participation, sure. These meetings adjourned.